This is a reading of the second mystery drama by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Soul's Probation. This is Scene 9. A forest glade, as in Scene 6. Joseph Keene, Dame Keene, their daughter Bertha, afterward peasants, later the monk, finally Keene's foster daughter Celia, and Thomas. Bertha. I'd like so much, dear mother, to hear from you that story, the one that Celia used to tell about. No one can tell us, as you, the tales which our dear father brings us from the knights. Indeed, there is surely no one who does not love to hear them. Joseph Keene. These stories are true treasures for the soul. What they can give the spirit stays unchanged even beyond our death, and will bear fruit in later lives on earth. We marvel at their hidden truth, and out of marveling, our souls form knowledge, which we need in life. Yes, if only all the people understood what gifts the knights bestow on them. It is a pity Celia and Thomas at present have deaf ears for them, for they receive their wisdom somewhere else. Bertha. Today I'd like so much to hear the tale which speaks of good and evil. Dame Keene. Right gladly I will tell it you. Now listen. Once upon a time there lived a man who pondered much about the world. His brain was tortured most of all by his desire to know the origin of evil. But he could give himself on this no answer. The whole world comes from God, so argued he. And God can only have the good within himself. Then how do evil men come from the good? Time and again he pondered, all in vain. The answer could not be discovered. One day it came to pass this gloomy thinker upon his way beheld a tree, which was in conversation with an axe. And mark, the axe was saying to the tree, "What is impossible for you to do, that I can do. I can fell you, but not you, me." The tree then gave this answer to the haughty axe. "A year ago a man cut out the wood from which he made your handle out of my body with another axe." And when the man had heard this speech, a thought arose within his soul he could not clearly put in words. It gave, however, answer to his question, how evil can derive from good. Joseph Keene. Bear in mind this tale, my child, and you will see how we, in contemplating nature, arrive at knowledge in the human head. I know how much I can explain by pondering upon the tales by which our knights instruct us. Bertha, truly, I am a simple little thing, and never surely could I understand what clever people would relate with learned words about their science. I have no sense at all for things like that. I get quite sleepy when our Thomas begins to tell us of his work. But when my father, coming from the castle, brings home the tales, and hour after hour puts his own thoughts to them, right gladly could I listen without end. Quite often Celia speaks about a pious heart, which to her mind is something that I lack. But it is truly piety I feel when I call up these tales before my eyes and can, with all my heart, rejoice in them. Joseph Keene, Dame Keene, and Bertha go out. After a pause, peasants enter the glade. First peasant. My uncle came home yesterday. For long he's made an honest living as miner in Bohemia. Much news he has to tell of what he heard upon his journey. Great agitations everywhere. They're closing in upon the knights, and everywhere is well prepared against the brothers of the order here. The castle will soon be besieged. Second peasant. They should not hesitate too long. Full many of us will rush to join them in the fight, and you can count on me for sure among the first. First woman. It's headlong into ruin you'll be running. Who'd be a fool and not consider how well the castle has been fortified? In truth, there'll be a frightful war. Second woman. The peasants should not mix themselves in things they do not understand. But there are many busy ones going from place to place and stirring up revolt. Now it has come so far that helplessly the sick must lie untended in distress. The kindly man who formerly gave help to many a one no longer dares to leave the castle. They've harmed him dreadfully. Third woman. And that's because so many were embittered when they discovered whence the sickness came that's broken out among our cows. The Jew bedeviled them. He cures the people only as a sham to serve with hellish arts the evil powers. Third peasant. There was much gossip about heresy, which came to nothing. The people prospered, and no better could they do than pass their leisure time with evil talk. Then someone, shrewdly working on the people, made up the nonsense that the Jew bewitched our cattle. And then, of course, a storm broke loose. Fourth peasant. I think you should consider what war and all its horrors mean. Our fathers often told us what they endured in times when everywhere the land was occupied by troops. Fifth woman. I've said it time and again. Their lordship's rule must vanish. Indeed, a dream has shown to me how we can serve the troops and care for them right well when they arrive to carry out the siege. Sixth peasant. If dreams are still to be believed, we do not need to question. The knights have tried to make us more intelligent than were our fathers, and now they shall find out just how much cleverer we have become. Our fathers give them welcome here, but we will chase them out. I know the secret passageways which lead into the castle. I used to work up there until my anger drove me out. I'll show the noble knights how science can be useful. Fourth woman. He's surely planning nothing good. I feel quite frightened at his words. Fifth peasant. I have been shown already in a vision how soon by secret ways a traitor will lead the enemy into the castle. Sixth woman. I find such visions most pernicious. If we can think as Christians still, then we should know that honesty, not treachery, will rescue us from evil. Sixth peasant. I let these people talk and do what brings results. This one or that calls something wrong that he's not able to achieve himself because he lacks the courage. But let's go on our way. There comes the Holy Father on this path. He should not be disturbed. I always have been able to follow him so easily, but what he preached today, how much I could not understand. The peasants go out in the direction of the forest. After a pause, the monk enters along the path. Monk. The paths of soul must lead into confusion when man desires to follow his own being. It could be only weakness of my heart which brought before my eyes those phantoms I saw within the castle. They showed themselves in conflict. This proves to me how little yet in me the forces of my soul unite themselves. I will, therefore, bestir myself anew to kindle in myself those words which bring me light from spirit heights. Another path can lure the man whose mind stays blinded by his vanity. The soul can only triumph over falsehood by showing itself worthy of the grace that can reveal from fonts of love the spirit light in wisdom's word. I know that I will find you, noble power. You will throw light on what the fathers taught, if, from the darkness of my self-conceit, with piously devoted heart, I can escape. The monk goes out. After a pause, Celia and Thomas come into the glade. Celia, dear brother, often ardently I bowed in silent prayer before the godly fountainhead, and longed wholeheartedly to be united with it. A sheen of light appeared then to my spirit, which radiated gentle warmth. It shaped itself into a human image, and looked at me with tender eyes, pronouncing words that sounded thus to me: You were forsaken once through man's delusion. You are supported now by human love. So wait till longing finds the path on which that love can guide itself to you. So spoke the human image to me often. I could not solve the riddle of these words. Yet dimly I divined with quickened feeling that one day they would be fulfilled. And then when you, beloved brother, came, and when I first set eyes on you, I felt my senses leaving me. You bore full likeness to that human face. Thomas, dream and prophetic feeling did not lie. It was my longing leading me to you. Celia, and when you wanted me in marriage, I thought you destined for me by the Spirit. Thomas, the Spirit wished to reunite us. Indeed, it's shown us this in perfect clarity, although at first we did not understand it. When we first met, it seemed to me as if the Spirit wished to give to me a wife. But I had found again the long-lost sister. Celia, and now there's nothing will divide us. Thomas, and yet, as much that stands between us, I must reject the brotherhood to which your parents link themselves. Celia, but they are filled with love and goodness. You will find in them the best of friends. Thomas, my faith will separate me from them. Celia, you'll find the way to them through me. Thomas, good Keene is of a stubborn mind. He will see naught but darkness there where I perceive the very font of light. This light of truth did not become accessible to me until maturer years. What I had learned of it in childhood was hardly conscious to my spirit, and later on it was my sole intent to work and get the scientific skill as means to earn a livelihood. Then, finally, I found the teacher and the guide who had the power to liberate my soul. The words he lets me listen to bear certainly the signs of truth. He speaks in such a way that heart and head alike can yield themselves to teachings he gives with gentle kindness. Till then I had to make the greatest effort to understand the other spirit path. I found this path must lead to error, relying only on those spirit forces which well may guide aright in earthly matters but cannot lead to higher worlds. And how am I to find the way into the hearts of men who only expect salvation from this error? Celia, I hear your words, dear brother. They do not seem inspired by peace. Yet they recall before my soul from former days a peaceful image. It was on a Good Friday. Many years ago I saw the image I described before. The man who bore your countenance at that time spoke these words. Out of the Godhead rose the human soul. Dying, it can descend to depths of being. It will in time release from death the Spirit. Not until afterwards was I aware that these words are the motto of our knights. Thomas, O sister, must I hear from your own lips the evil words our foes are treasuring as a revelation of the highest spirit truth? Celia, in my own heart I am indeed averse to all the outer doings of the knights. I'm faithful to the creed that comforts you, but I will always be convinced that those who, as the purpose of their teachings, avow such paths of soul, do follow in the steps of Christ. In my devotion to the Spirit, I must confess that I believe my brother Spirit wished to speak that day of inner goals for peace. Thomas, through powers of fate, these inner goals for peace do not seem destined for our life. Our Father they have taken from us within the very hour that gave him back. Celia, pain robs me of all clarity of sense when hearing how you speak about our Father. Your heart inclines you lovingly to him, and yet you tremble when you try to think yourself united with him once again in life. In loyalty you follow our wise teacher and cannot hear the message of true love that streams abundantly through all his words. I feel a dark enigma looms before me. I see your honest heart and your firm faith and can but shuddering stand at the abyss which deepens dreadfully between them both. And if as comforter there did not live in me the hope that love will always overcome, I'd lack the courage to endure this grief. Thomas, it is concealed from you, dear sister, how power of thought can prove compelling once it has gripped the human soul. The Son does not oppose the Father here. Thought turns away from thought. I feel its force within my soul. To strive against it means in truth my own self's spirit death. The curtain falls while Thomas and Celia are still in the glade. End of scene 9.